All right, Sam Spencer, how are you?
Doing good. And happy to be here.
Well, I'm so grateful that you are willing to come on this internationally known podcast called the Harbor Podcast. I'm just kidding.
Millions
just
of our viewers.
Work. Yeah, that's right. I'd be concerned if there were millions of viewers. tell me, I always start with this question. What name is on your birth certificate, like the full name?
The full name is Samantha Jesse Loftus.
Oh, nice. So is there a story behind any of those names, Samantha or Jesse? Or?
Not Samantha, but Jesse is my mom's middle name. So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
So there's some ancestry there. That's cool.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Nice. And are you, what's the family makeup as far as the family you were born into?
So my mom and dad, and then I'm the oldest. And then I have a younger brother, Nathan, 2.5 years younger, and then another brother, Jacob. So we're all 2.5 years apart.
Cool. So did you say you're the only girl?
The only girl.
Oh, nice. But the oldest, yeah. So the that oldest. Maybe helped.
Yeah. No, yeah. Not really. My dad was a wrestler in high school, so our Sundays and basically every day was a wrestling match.
Oh, nice.
So even though I come to church in fancy dresses, I could take down anyone.
Oh boy. And you hold your own. Right?
I can definitely hold my own.
That's awesome. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Fresno, California. Just nothing too fancy. It's a little ghetto, a little bit of everything.
Cool. Have you ever heard of Tracy, California?
I have not.
Oh, okay. It's just north of, I guess, Modesto, but...
Modesto, like Visalia area?
Yeah, yeah. So I served my mission in Tracy, and it was sort of the...
Okay.
So that's as close I've been to Fresno, I guess you could say.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've seen it. It's nothing too impressive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Northern California should sort of be its own state, really. It's
yeah. Well, and Southern, like, they're so different. And
right.
It really should be three states.
Yeah, Northern, exactly.
Central and...
Nice.
Yeah.
So you consider yourself like a California girl or?
No.
No?
We were like 3 hours away from the beach. So you could still do like a day trip, but our beach, the closest one is called Pismo, and the water is so cold that you would not want to go in there. So no beach. And then we would get some snow up. It's called Shaver. But that's like 2 hours away. So we didn't like go snowboarding or anything. So I'm just... really, there's nothing. I like missed out in California. Didn't do snowboarding, didn't do beach, just living in the almond growing city, I guess is what it is.
So what activities sort of defined your childhood then?
So we lived in an apartment until I was 11. And our thing was we would just go out and you really could do whatever you wanted to do because we were in an apartment and it was gated. So spent a lot of time outside. And then, let's see, getting a little bit older, I really, really like sports and I did theater and I did a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I never really stuck to one thing, but you name it, I tried it. I just kind of bounced around from sport to sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, wish I would have stuck to one or two, but
yeah,
that's what it is.
So what was your main sport?
I started off doing running. I was pretty good at it, did a lot of running, and then I think I just burnt out. It was hot. I didn't realize that if you didn't like practice your sport over the summer, then you like weren't going to be good going into like high school. So I like didn't practice. I just hung out over the summer and then I would show up to school and everyone had been like practicing over the summer and I was so far behind and I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm sorry. So
cool.
Yeah.
And then religiously, was your family pretty traditional? Like, was it a traditional Latter-day Saint home or how would you describe it?
Yep. Family home evening every Monday, church every Sunday.
Nice. And your parents, are they raised in the church as well?
They, her mom was baptized when my mom was five. So like a convert, but she was like still baptized at eight. So I guess her family is a convert, but she was still pretty young. And then my dad, they were born, like my dad's parents were born into the church, left for a little bit and then came back by the time my dad was born. So they're very strong on my dad's side.
Nice. And so what was it like being a member of the church in Fresno?
Good. Let's see. Your ward, well, so Fresno's a little bit different because there's Fresno and Clovis, which is kind of like Provo and Orem, with like how close they are. Mm-hmm. So Fresno is like a little bit more ghetto, a little bit like just a little more run down. And then Clovis is super, super nice, where all of the money is, all the wealthy people are. I did not grow up with money, but I grew up in Clovis. So growing up, we were in like the nicer stake, and like there was a lot more to do. Like EFY was better. Girls camp was better. And then the Fresno stake needed more wards. So they took our ward and moved us into the Fresno stake. And I think that's where they caused a lot of problems, because we like were taken away from all of our friends. So it was, I liked being in the north stake, which was the Clovis stake. There's just a lot more to do. And then once we got pulled in the other stake, that's when things got really hard.
Yeah. And how old were you when that happened?
I was 16.
Oh, so, wow. So there's like in the middle of your youth experience, right?
Yeah. Well, and prior to this, there's a ward, it's called the Hmong ward. I don't know if they have anything like that here, but well, I guess they do. They have like the Samoan wards, but they would take families from like just different wards, and they would put you in with the Hmong ward, and it would just kind of help the flow of things, because sometimes they would just get up there and it was just a little bit different. Like they didn't speak English very well. We'd have to wear headsets while the missionaries translated. So we got called into that when I was 15. So I was in that, we were in that for a year before we got switched over to the other stake.
Yeah. Interesting. So how would you describe just your own personal faith development? Did you always have a believing heart, or what was that journey like as a developing teen?
So as a growing up, I didn't really have any issues. Well, I mean, growing up until I was like 14, loved the church, loved going to all the activities, was super excited to be there. And then in my talk, I mentioned that I have bipolar. And I think that's kind of when things just didn't make sense for me, because my mind was just never like being properly medicated. So my mind was just, it's not that I didn't believe, I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of like would go through the motions, do what I was supposed to do so I didn't get in trouble. And then once I turned maybe like 18 is when I really had to figure it out for myself, figure out like who I wanted to be. So there's probably like a 4-year gap where I was just kind of like, I don't really know what I want to do.
But you weren't necessarily like a rebel, like refusing to go to church. You just were like, okay, I guess I'll go to church, but whatever type of thing.
It wasn't an option. Like I never felt like I could say, no, I don't want to go to church. I don't know what would happen if I ever tried to say that. It was like, no, you're going to church no matter what. Like, it's not a question. So I never put up the fight. Like, we had seminary every morning at 6:00, and like same thing. It wasn't something that I was ever going to fight. I just went whether I wanted to or not.
Nice. So from your parents or family's perspective, they weren't necessarily like worried about you during their teenage years or anything. It was just, you're just being a teenager.
No, I think there was definitely some worry. Probably once I turned 16, I think, there was some definitely some concern with my behavior and my activities, but I still went to church. It wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't something that I was going to fight them on.
I mean, you said sort of when you got 18, did you kind of feel inside like, okay, I've got to really determine where I'm at with all this church stuff?
Yeah, because I didn't know like where I wanted to live. And so I think that was the big thing. It was like, okay, well, I'm moving out now, so where am I going to live? And I chose Utah, and I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to go to Utah, that means like I'm going to church. There's like, that's what everybody does.
Yeah. And so, plenty of options, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I was living in BYU housing, so it's like, I would go with my roommates and everything. And like I said, I never doubted the church. It's not like I ever doubted the church. I just didn't care. It wasn't like, I had other things that I was trying to figure out. Yeah. Like the church wasn't one of them.
Yeah. So you graduated high school and was the plan to like to go to college? Is that why you moved out to Utah, or you just needed to move out? That was the plan.
So we can get a little bit deeper. Okay. So I started in self-medicating, like doing drugs when I was probably around 16. My grades were horrible. I like didn't care. My parents weren't like abusive, but they were kind of emotionally neglectful. Like one time I remember getting sent home papers for like the ACT, and my mom was like, "Do you want to take this?" And I was like, "No." She's like, "Okay." Like, I didn't know I had to do these things to go to college. Like, we never talked about college. It was never something that was like, you need to go to college. Like, you need to serve a mission. You need to do this. It was just like, you're just living. You're just hanging out. So, like, I was never really prepared. So, by the time I graduated, I didn't have a good GPA. I'd never taken the ACT, never taken the SAT. I was just kind of like, what can I do with this? Like, what am I supposed to do with this? So, I just moved out here, hoping I would figure it out along the way. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Was Utah a bit of a draw mainly because of sort of that church community, or did you have family here, or what? I mean, out of all the places you could go.
Yeah. Mostly because that's where everyone from Fresno goes. It's either BYU, Utah, or it's either BYU or BYU, Idaho. Yeah. And BYU seemed more fun than Idaho. Okay. So
yeah.
But Idaho had too many rules. Like you couldn't wear shorts or something. And I was like, okay, I'm already like making a big transition. I can't have too many rules or I'm gonna freak out. So.
And did you anticipate that at some point in the near future you would go to college, or, I mean, did you have that desire?
I did. I signed up at, have you heard of LDSBC?
Oh yeah. I used to, I was an adjunct professor there. So
yeah. So I was taking some classes there for nursing, and it got to like the phlebotomy unit where we like do needles and stuff. And I couldn't handle it. So I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, just going to work. Maybe college isn't for me, and I'm done. So I definitely gave it a valiant effort. And then after I had Max, my oldest, I started taking some more classes just to like get into it. But
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I just don't like school. It's so hard for me.
Hey,
but I'm right really want you. To. I want to have my degree.
So let's go back just more, I guess, put it all in context with, you know, you mentioned that you're bipolar. Mm-hmm. Like looking back in hindsight, I know a lot of people, even myself, I mean, I've interviewed various people about it and tried to understand it and had friends that experienced it as well. But was there like, as you look back, was there an age where like that mental health disorder kind of really, like you could pinpoint like, okay, probably that year is sort of when it really got going, right? Like, and then what is it, or how do you explain it?
100%. So 14, I can very, very vividly remember waking up being so, so mad. It wasn't like a normal mood swing. It was like, I have never felt this much rage in all of my life. And I got into a fight with my parents, and I destroyed my room. I like flipped mattresses. I knocked over dressers. Like, I just never felt so much like anger. Uh-huh. And ever since then, it was really, really hard for me to, that's why I never stuck with the sport, because I always needed something new. I couldn't do something, I couldn't do one thing for a very long time. I was always needing something new. I always needed to change. My room. This is another thing that drives me crazy. I was always rearranging my room. Like every single weekend, it'd be in a new, just some crazy new thing. And my hair, I was always dyeing my hair. One week it'd be brown, one week it'd be blonde. It was like falling out. It was so bad. Like there were so many signs that like this wasn't right. Like this isn't a normal moodiness. There's a lot of signs, I think, that something more was going on. I just don't know if my parents knew how to like handle it or like knew what to do.
Yeah.
But I think that there were definitely signs, and I can remember it starting like around 14.
Yeah. And so obviously in the name bipolar, like you're shifting from different polar like emotions, right? I mean, how would you explain just the experience in general?
Yeah. So there's two types of bipolar. There's one and two. I have bipolar type two. So it means that it's not so fast. It's not like up and down as fast. It's more longer episodes. So like, I can be really high for a week or in really low for like a month compared to like constant shifting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to describe it just because it's so normal to me.
Yeah.
It's not fun. I can tell you that, but I don't know exactly how to put it into words. It's just sometimes it's not right. Sometimes your mind just is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's definitely not a good like state or just to live life in, right? Cause you're just all over the place. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, looking back in high school, I wish I would have been on medication and gotten help because I know that if I were to have been stable, I would have been able to stick out one sport and maybe I would have been really good at a sport. Like, maybe I would have gotten scholarships to a sport. I don't want to brag, but I was running like a 5-minute mile. I was doing pretty good. And that was like in sixth grade. So like, maybe if I was able to be stable, I could have pursued things that I wanted to pursue instead of just like waking up one day and just being like, no, I'm done with this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But like doing that every single day.
Yeah. And then, so now like with the right medications and things, is it you just kind of feel more of that general stability?
Oh, for sure. There was a period where like my medicine wasn't so good and just, I mean, I think the big thing is like my mood is I'm just very snappy. Just because you're going through so many emotions so quickly, it's just like, I don't have any patience. I'm not fun to be around because one day you might be around me and I could be super bubbly. I could be really like fun. And then the next day, if I'm in a mood, like nobody wants to hang out with that. So it's not only hard for me, but it's hard for people around me because like, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So now going back to those teenage years, so, you know, you're trying as a young teenager, you're trying to grapple with all of this, right? And so you can't cope. And so therefore you need some solution to numb out, I would imagine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so drugs and, you know, seem to be a pretty good option in the moment, right?
I think if you ask anybody with bipolar, they're going to say that they've done drugs at some point in their life because you have to, like, you need something to calm yourself because you can't live like that. It's your mind is just, it's always going and it's so fast and you're so mad and so happy and you don't know why. And you need, like, you just need it all to stop. And so like, it's really depressing, but it's drugs or suicide and drugs are a lot better than that. Like, unless like, you know, what's going on and unless you're able to get the help, that's like really what you go to.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And so, I mean, did you, as a teenager trying to cope with all this, did you feel like you were a pretty social person but then just social in the wrong crowds, or how would you describe it?
I used to be super social. Like, I used to have a really, really good group of friends. I used to be super fun. And then, like I said, sometimes, with bipolar, like when your mood is all over the place, I think my friends very quickly got sick of like, one day she's happy, one day she's not. One day she's happy, the next day anything I say is going to irritate her. So probably by like junior year, I did not have a lot of friends. I probably had like one friend, if that.
You just burned all the bridges, right? Until there's no more bridges.
Every single bridge. I tried to get my parents to transfer me schools. I tried to be homeschooled. Teenagers are very, very hard.
Yeah. And talking with your parents about this now, I mean, were they just hoping that you would grow out of this really tough teenager phase, or how are they responding to it?
That's what they say. My mom just says that She thought it was just a teenager going through mood swings. But the thing is bipolar is very genetic. And so my grandma has bipolar and like seven of my cousins have bipolar. So I don't know if, I think maybe she was just in denial because there's no way. Like I was so like not gone, but I had hit rock bottom. And I think as a 16-year-old, that's not normal to have hit rock bottom so young. Yeah. So I think there were definitely signs. I think she was just in denial.
Interesting. So when you come out to Utah, you're sort of, you know, you're moving on with life. And then, but it just perpetuated as far as, I mean, now you could have a refresh of life, right? You could make new friends.
Nobody knew.
Yeah.
Nobody knew. I could be whoever I wanted to be. And I think with dating out here, since it goes so fast, like you date so many people in such a short amount of time that like, they don't really get to see the bipolar because everything is so high and so new that it doesn't really have a time to like, they don't have a time to see your lows. I mean, like you date somebody for 2 weeks and it's hard to like be depressed within 2 weeks of dating somebody. Just because everything is so new, everything is so exciting. So, Brayden and I met probably like 6 months after I'd moved out here and I probably had already dated like 12 people. So like, there was just a lot of turnover. I didn't really have time to like have a low. So everything was just very up and very high for me.
Yeah.
And even through like throughout dating Brayden and the engagement process and the wedding, like that was all super exciting and new. And I didn't really have a chance to like sit and be like in a, there was like no stall. Everything was so like, everything was moving so quickly. Not like stable, but everything was just not like process what was going on. But anyways, yeah, just there wasn't enough time to be like in a low just because of all the turnover. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So, at the same time, I imagine that's an exciting time of life, right?
It was super exciting. So everything was just like at a high for me. I was just new place, new city, dating a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So just all like very, very happy. But I think maybe a little too happy. I just didn't realize it. But I think it was just like the first time where I felt like nobody knew who I was and nobody knew my past. So I was able to like be a little bit more free.
Yeah. And I would imagine like with bipolar, when you're the lows of lows, I mean, obviously everybody's really concerned about you, right? But when you're in the highs of highs, it's like, oh, wow, she's doing great.
Oh, she's doing great. Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. She must be, you know, on an upswing here. This is great.
Yeah, like she's getting better. Yeah.
When in reality, that can be just as much of a red flag as the low of lows, right?
Exactly. But no, yeah, nobody knows that. They just, you hear depression and you get worried. But with bipolar, if somebody's like doing really, really good, that can also be, maybe she's doing a little too good.
Yeah. So what's the story about that led to like an official diagnosis?
So I didn't talk about this in my talk, but when I was 18, I was still in high school and, I used to self-harm and I think it was my teacher, told the like school administrative and they're like, she can't come back to school until she gets help. So I went to the doctor and I ended up in a psychiatric ward for a few days and they diagnosed me with bipolar. And I said, no, I was like, I'm not bipolar. This is just like, it's just a bad day. Like I'm not doing this. So I kind of knew when I was 18, but I ignored it. And then when Brayden and I got married is kind of when I sat down with him and I asked him and I was like, do you think something's wrong with me? Like, one time somebody told me that I had bipolar, but I just ignored it. But do you think like something is actually wrong? And he was like, he was so nice about it. He was like, well, sometimes you do things that like don't make sense. And sometimes your mood is a little different, but like maybe. So he just kind of like tiptoed around it. And so I was more of like, I think something is wrong. I think we should go get help. And we did. We went to the doc. It takes a while to get into the doctor, but once we did, they were like, yeah, you obviously have bipolar. Like
yeah.
This is the classic signs of bipolar.
And that's another like characteristic, right? Like I have a good friend who was diagnosed bipolar, and before he was diagnosed, like just like such irrational things that he would do, that, like so out of character, and just sort of looking at him like, what is going on? Like it just to the outsider, you're just like something is off here, right?
Because that is so far off. It makes total sense. You're like, yeah, this is like, what do you mean? This is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine like with any diagnosis, it's hard to avoid that feeling of shame that comes with it, right? Sort of like, you know, this feels like a label. I'm now in this box and you don't want to believe it. When in reality, it's, you know, long-term it's a very positive thing if you know what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah. I feel like especially with bipolar, has a very, very nasty stereotype. Like you just think of, I mean, what I thought about it when I first heard bipolar is I think of homeless people. I think of people living in a psych ward. I think of people who are just like crazy. Just because that's kind of what you're like, what you see on TV. And when, just from what I knew with my cousins, like I said, I have like 7 cousins and they all have bipolar and they're all drug addicts. They're all living in the street. They're all in and out of jail. And so that's all I knew from bipolar. And so I was so scared because I was like, I don't want to end up in jail. I don't want to end up on the streets. But once I was able to like make a plan and like get on medicine, it totally changed. Yeah. And so I think that's maybe why I'm so open about bipolar is because like, it doesn't have to be so nasty. It still sucks, but it doesn't have to like, you can live a normal life with it. It's wish people wouldn't be so nasty about it.
And then you mentioned in your sacrament, you talked just like this led to, as far as with the church, like repentance process and things like that, like was like in that moment, as you're working with church leaders, did they know that what you were dealing with as far as bipolar and things, or how did that process go? And what did you learn from that?
So yeah, that was actually before I got married in the temple, because I did want to get married in the temple, and due to like things that I had done, I wouldn't have been able to. So I cleared all of that up with even before I like was officially diagnosed with bipolar. I think that's probably when I was like more in the normal range. I was able to make some good decisions.
So you had some stability there.
I did have some stability where I was able to realize, okay, if I want to live the life that I want to, I can, I need to make some changes. Luckily, I was able to meet Brayden and get married before I like did anything to ruin that. Because I mean, everything changes so fast with bipolar. So
yeah, I'm glad I was so and now at this point in 2024, how long have you been married?
It will be 9 years in July.
Okay, cool. And then, so as far as bipolar is concerned, like, what does the future look like for you? Because it seems like you have things dialed in as far as medications and things. And I mean, from the sound and the tone of your talk, it sounds like you're optimistic about the future. But I mean, how would you explain that further?
Yeah. So I do have my medications dialed in right now, but in 6 weeks, it could be different. That's the sucky thing. During fall is really hard for me, with like the seasonal changes. So I still have to be careful. I have to, make sure that I get my medicine adjusted. So even though it's stable right now, I have to be very on top of it. I have to, even if I start to feel off for one day, I have to tell Brayden, I can't just be like, I'm tougher than bipolar. Like I can do this. Like there's no pushing through. If I feel the slightest bit off, I have to go get help immediately, because I'm in such a good place right now that I don't want to risk any of it. I don't want to like risk putting my boys through anything. So even though it may like, or even though I do have it together right now, I have to work for it every day. It's not like, oh, I'll be on this medication in 3 years. Like it could change at any second.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am feeling optimistic though, because of, I think just seeing where I've been to where I am now and just having a better understanding of it, makes me excited. Like it still sucks and it's still hard. It's not something that I wish on anything. I'm really scared that my boys will have it because it is genetic. I'm super nervous that they'll have it because of how hard it is. But I, if they do have it, it's not like it's the worst thing. It's something that they can manage and something that we'll be on top of.
Yeah. And hopefully you'll be able to recognize some of those signs earlier on.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think there's definite warning signs.
Yeah. So a part of this is just you're getting better, just sort of recognizing like, whoa, like today's a really bad day. And it's not a matter of you can't just like lay low for a couple of days and hope to get over it. It's like, I need to actually go in and talk to with a doctor and get this addressed. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Honestly, medicine can just change so fast. Like one day you can wake up and your body is just like, I'm not going to metabolize this medicine anymore. And so you'll have to go on something new. Or let's say you gain 10 pounds. Well, now your dosage is off to your body weight ratio and you have to take more medicine. So it's like, even if you're doing everything that you can, like there's just little factors that you don't think of that can change your medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Anything else about the topic of bipolar that you'd want to explain or talk about? I appreciate just how much you're being so open about it, because it is helpful to understand and learn about. But anything else that we're missing?
Not that I can think of. I was really nervous to give my talk just because of how open I was going to be. But I'm really glad that I did, because I probably have had like 5 or 6 people reach out to me with bipolar. Just like saying that it's so easy to feel alone when you have bipolar, because it's not something that people really talk about. And so that they were just glad that they could really like have somebody to relate to. And then there was somebody else in the ward whose daughter just got out of the behavioral unit. And I was actually just talking to her on the phone before I hopped on the call with you. And it's just, it can be so scary when you first are diagnosed, but you really can live such a happy life with it. Mm-hmm. And so I just want people to be not embarrassed to be like, have the diagnosis of bipolar. Like, it does have a bad rap, but with the right help and like the right support, you really can live a happy life.
Yeah. That's really encouraging. Really. That's great. So just tell me, what's the story behind meeting Brayden?
We were living at Liberty Square, which is a pretty big BYU apartment. If you have been down there, it was a movie night. We saw each other. It was not love at first sight. We were not friends at first. He was getting over a bad breakup. I was not really in the mood to be in a serious relationship. So we were just friends for a few months. And then he had a date that was supposed to happen this night and it fell through. And we were already hanging out. Like we were pretty good friends. Like we weren't in a relationship, but we were really good friends. And he was like, hey, my date fell through. Do you want to go on a date with me? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And we've been together ever since.
Nice. So once the date, the official date happened, it was like, okay, we're meant to be. Yeah.
But I think we were both just, I mean, obviously with my bipolar, I was trying to figure things out. He like was a return missionary who was dating other return missionaries, and I was far from that. And so I think he was a little bit like confused, because I think he did like me, but I was so far from his type that I don't think he was quite ready to like take a chance on me. Uh-huh. And then once he did, I think he was like, okay, we can do this.
Nice. So how long did you date before you got engaged?
Let's see. We started dating in November. We were engaged like 5 months later. So we dated for like 5 months and then got married like 3 months later.
Is there a cool engagement story? Or
we got married on Easter. We went to a general conference and then we went out. Do you know where Daybreak is?
Yeah. You got engaged on Easter, you mean?
On Easter, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You said you got married on Easter, but you got engaged on Easter.
We got engaged on Easter. We went to a general conference and then we got engaged later that night. Oh, nice.
Cool. That's great. It was cute, And you have 2 boys, right?
We do. Maxwell, who is 5, and then Conrad, who just turned 3.
That's cool. Maxwell is actually on my list of boys' names, but we just had 1 boy. So
Oh, really?
You can use it. You can go ahead.
That's okay, fine. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that name. And then, so what would you say, like, what's it like for you being a mom?
It's super fun. Different than what I thought. I hope my mom never hears this, but I never wanted to be the mom that my mom was. I was like, I'm not going to be like her. And
I think most people feel that way. I don't know. I just,
yeah. So I try really hard to do everything that she wouldn't do. but I love it. It's so fun.
So does that mean you're less strict or more strict?
I think I'm the same amount of strict. I think it's more like emotional. Like I'm very, like, it's so lame, but I'm like, how are your feelings today? Like, do you need a hug? Yeah, sure. Like, are you, I just like want to make sure that their emotions are always like seen. Cause I don't feel like mine were, or like my emotions were like, let's pretend that you don't have any. So I'm trying to, do you need to talk? What do you want to talk about? Like,
yeah,
sure. Make sure that they know that they can say whatever they want and not like feel shamed or feel embarrassed for having weird emotions.
Right. Yeah. And I think just my experience, you know, the best thing to have empathy for your parents is to become a parent yourself. And the more that's the case, you're like, oh wow, like, yeah, this is harder than I thought, or I'm going to focus on these things. But I get that. Yeah. You weren't like the perfect parent, but I don't think you were ever meant to be the perfect parent. You know, it's just, it is what it is, you know? So,
oh, for sure. That's one of my biggest things. When I was first diagnosed with bipolar, I was so, so mad at my parents, because I was like, you should have known the warning signs. I don't have a great future because of you. I was like, I didn't go to school because of you. I didn't do all these things because of you. And I was super, super mad that they didn't give me this life that I thought I deserved. And now I'm not going to lie, I'm still frustrated. Like, I still feel like there were warning signs, but I do have a lot more sympathy. And I do feel bad, because they probably were so scared seeing the things that they saw, because I was a hard teenager and the things that I did were probably really scary. And so I do feel bad that they like how to see that and just not knowing how to handle it. So it's just, it's a weird relationship that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But being a parent definitely helps, because sometimes when they're being hard, I'm like, oh gosh, I can't even imagine what I was like. They're only five.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And do you hope to like have a big family, or, I mean, anything worth saying there?
When Brayden and I first got married, we did want a big family. We wanted like five kids. And then with Conrad, and my talk, I said that I can't have any more kids.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So we've looked into adoption, into fostering. 2 years ago, we were going to foster. My cousin had a baby and he was put in the foster system, and we were going to foster him for a little bit. Like we were, we almost had a plane ticket. Like we were getting ready to go out and meet him. But, it ended up falling through, and like the mom got him back. And it's a really weird place to be in fostering, because you really want this baby, but then that means that the parent is not doing good. And so it's a hard place to want somebody to fail, but then it's like you want their baby. So I don't know if I could do fostering again. And then we're thinking about doing adoption, but it's the same thing. I don't know if I can, like, we submit papers and then you wait for however long to get a baby.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, am I going to be checking my email every day to see if I have a baby or not? And then what's that going to be like for my boys if I'm like emotionally distant because I'm waiting for this baby?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's tough. We're still trying to figure it out.
And just like getting that news of not being able to have, you know, biological children. I mean, that's just hard, right? I mean, anything worth mentioning as far as how you handled that or how you are handling it, or?
Not very well.
Sure.
I feel really bad, but Conrad's birthday is really, really hard for me. It was the week before Easter. And so like 2 weeks leading up to Conrad's birthday every year, it's just really depressing, because it's just a reminder. So I always have to do a big birthday for him to like make up for the fact that I'm kind of depressed on his birthday. It makes me feel like a little bit better for not giving him like all of the attention that I should. Yeah. But yeah, every like 6 months or something, I still cry about it. Brayden and I cry about it. Yeah. And I don't know if we'll ever not cry about it, just because it really wasn't something that we were expecting.
Yeah, that's big.
Mm-hmm. But so far, so good. You know, good. You do what you can. Just love our boys even more. Because we know that we're not having more anytime soon. So we give them a little bit too much love. They're too baby, too coddled, too spoiled.
Yeah.
But they don't have anyone else to spoil. So
that's right.
They're going to get
that's
it all.
Yeah. Like at this stage of your life, or like, what do you do for fun, or what's your go-to, like, just activity that you look forward to?
Yeah. So I like to paint, and Brayden and I like to exercise. We're just getting into the phase of life where we have like preschool and swim and soccer. So
yeah,
I'm like an official soccer mom. We have so many activities that by the time I get home, I am so tired. One thing that I talked about in my talk was my medicine, like, controls basically everything. So we go to bed like at 10 o'clock, and then I wake up probably like at 10 o'clock. So I feel like I have very limited hours to do things. And so when I am awake, I have to be super productive, like cleaning or taking the boys places. So I don't have as much free time that I would like to have. Just because of my medicine, but I feel like that's one thing that I've accepted, and it is what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And then you mentioned in your talk that, because you're currently in the primary presidency, right?
I am. Yeah.
Nice. And that you're what the type that just loves primary, I would imagine, right? Which is,
what's not to love, I've never really had like a big girl calling before. Like I was, No, because we got pregnant pretty fast, and then it was COVID. So I never really had a calling. So I got put into the primary presidency, and I was like, okay, like this is, I like it. McKenna, the president, does a great job. She carries all the stress. I try to take it off of her. But I think that's why we work really well, is she like worries too much. I don't worry enough. So together we get everything done.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's great. That's
like
cool.
If you ask the stake president, she'll come in, or not the stake president, the stake first counselor, she'll come in every once in a while, and she's like, how are you guys? Do you need anything? And I'm like, no, we're doing great. But you should go ask McKenna, because I'm sure she has a list that I don't carry that weight as much. It's probably because of my medicine. It helps me relax a little bit.
Nice. That's great. Any other dynamic in your life or concept that we didn't touch on, or do we, that's pretty good. Good synopsis, or what do you think?
No, I think that's a pretty good synopsis. Cool. I mean, obviously I could write a whole book on my high school experience, but a good overview, a less scary overview of the things that I've been through.
Nice. So maybe give us like one question, whether it's related to your high school years, like if somebody saw you at church, what's a question they could ask you, and don't answer it here, because then, you know, they wouldn't ask you that. So what's a question people could ask you that they may have an interesting answer?
Like, what should people ask me that would have an interesting answer?
Yeah. Or like it's something about you, whether it's your favorite candy or.
Oh, probably what I used to want to be in high school.
All right.
Like what my dream occupation was in high school.
All right.
Perfect. That's a creepy answer.
Nice. That's good. I think that'll intrigue people, and they can ask you about it. As we wrap up, how do you describe your faith today?
I have to have faith. I have to have the gospel. I tell Brayden about once a week, this better be worth it. Like, meaning when we die and the afterlife, like, it better be worth it, because otherwise, like, it's not fair. And so I think my relationship with God is very, like, it's very personal, and it's very strong, because I have to have it. If I didn't have the knowledge of having like a perfect body after this, I don't think I would have motivation to do anything. I would just sleep, because sometimes it's just really hard. So the gospel is really like really one of the big things that keeps me going, because like the excitement of having a perfect body afterwards it's really cool. And so that keeps me going. So I have a pretty strong testimony.
Awesome. All right. Last question I have for you is if we get a time machine and go 100 years into the future and you get out and all your posterity is there, like here's Grandma Sam. She came to the future to tell us a message. Like what's the one message that you would want to give your posterity?
Ooh. Well, first I would want to make sure that anyone that had a mental illness was taking care of themselves.
That's right.
Let them know that it's important and that it's not embarrassing. I think I just want them to know that their Heavenly Father loves them and that even though sometimes life isn't fair and sometimes we don't understand why, just that their Heavenly Father loves them. I think that that's really important. And that's really the only thing that can, that helps is like, well, sometimes that doesn't help, but for the most part, it does help knowing that your Heavenly Father is there and that He loves you. So I'd always want them to remember that.